Hello and welcome to Oxcast, your one and only guide to getting out and about in the city of Oxford.
Mm-hmm. I'm Emma Pearson.
And I'm Alwyn Collinson. We're your hosts from dailyinfo.co.uk.
Yeah.
And we have got a packed programme for you.
We have lots of different things this week.
Absolutely, yeah.
We're starting off with foodie films, aren't we?
Yeah, that's right. We're going to have our usual guide to the new releases that are out in Oxford cinemas, plus a culinary suggestion inspired by said films.
Indeed. What are we starting off with then? There's a Scandinavian film out, isn't there?
Yes, that's right. It's called Headhunters,
okay.
And it's from apparently acclaimed Scandinavian director Joe Nesbø. I haven't personally heard of him, but then other people probably have. And it's a Norwegian thriller about a corporate recruiter who funds his lavish lifestyle and his beautiful wife via burglary.
Okay.
So it's on this week. It's coming out in the Odeon George Street and the Phoenix Picture House.
Right.
We've got a review on our website, which is very, very positive. And so we need a Scandinavian film recommendation, food recommendation, sorry.
We do. So are there any Scandinavian restaurants in Oxford?
No,
I can't think of any.
I don't think so, no.
No.
Scandinavian cuisine tends to run towards sort of, you know, rotted fish, doesn't it?
Yes. So what are we going to do? Well, I guess we can have a sort of picnic-based thing.
Exactly, yeah, that's a good idea. One of our co-workers suggested that in the absence of a proper restaurant, what you can do is you can go and get your own Scandinavian ingredients and take them out into somewhere like South Parks or University Parks and eat them there.
So where's the rotten fish restaurant in the fish sales?
I don't know whether their fish is rotten. I wouldn't want to go on air for slander. But the Covered Market, which has a fish seller called Heyman's, so they sell gravidlax, which is Norwegian cured salmon, and rollmops, which are pickled herring. So you can buy them from there. You can get Jarlsberg cheese, is Norwegian, so buy that from a supermarket.
That one with holes in.
Yeah, that's right, the yellowy one with holes in. And obviously you can have that with the famed Norwegian speciality of butter.
Indeed, which you can buy from several places.
Yes, unlike the Norwegians, who until recently couldn't buy it at all. Do you remember reading about this?
I don't, but you told me, tell me about it.
Yeah, well, the Norwegians had a butter shortage just before Christmas because a new, like, low-carb diet, sort of Atkins-style, was sweeping across Norway.
That's crazy.
It's really weird. And for this brief time, you couldn't buy butter in Norway. And people were smuggling it over the border from Sweden. There were butter smugglers caught.
That's so crazy that one diet takes a whole country.
It's bizarre, isn't it? Yeah, and apparently the Norwegians just love, like, buttery desserts and cakes and stuff around Christmas.
Right.
And I actually even saw one.
They really loved this.
Yeah, they were absolutely obsessed with butter, and it was a big, like, national blow for them.
Yeah.
I saw one guy who'd posted pictures of himself on Facebook with stacks of butter in each hand, like kind of gangster style, you know.
Look what I've got.
Exactly, buttery bling.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
What about a tipple after the meal then?
Well, I don't know, because what do Norwegians drink?
There's that thing, what's it called? Aquavit.
Aquavit. Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's a kind of, it's kind of schnapps, isn't it? Like a liqueur.
Yes, I think so. I've never had it. Mm-hmm. I guess it comes from aquavitae, like
Latin, is
like the water of life, like the same as whiskey is.
Is whiskey named after the water of life?
It is. It's sort of Gaelic or something like that, I think. And I don't really know how to pronounce it, but the whiskey is water of life, yes.
Brilliant.
Apparently.
Okay, cool. So there we go. That's our suggestion. Take all these ingredients and go and eat them in a park.
Together.
Yeah. While it's still cold enough outside that you can, you know, appreciate that kind of real Scandinavian atmosphere.
Yes.
So what else is out then?
There's Wrath of the Titans, which, as a classicist, I feel I should mention.
Yeah, but it is based very closely, this film, on authentic Greek myth, isn't that right?
Not so sure about that.
Really?
I always just feel so sorry for the Titans in every film that comes out.
Well, they're the bad guys, right?
They're always depicted as the bad guys.
Yeah.
But they're totally not the bad guys.
Well, hang on, didn't they, like, rebel against the gods or something like that?
No, they rebelled against.
Really?
The Olympians rebelled against them.
Yeah.
And the Titans were, in fact, ruling during the Golden Age.
Right, okay. Sounds good.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Titans were all great, then?
Well, I mean, Kronos did eat his children, but you know, it's not like Zeus has a completely clean record.
So you're coming down on the side of baby eaters in this great debate, are you?
Just a little bit.
Okay, great. That's the kind of inclinations that an Oxford Classics degree will give you, people. But anyway, so despite your concerns about the authenticity of the mythology, I loved Troy. Didn't you love Troy? All the bits.
With the complete absence of gods.
Yeah, and the complete absence also of homosexuality, I also thought was brilliant, where you have that shot where you go into Achilles' tent. And
they're cousins, very much cousins.
Yes, so they're covered in naked women. Yes. You know, you have to make sure that it's very clear.
Look how straight we
are. It's very straight.
It's got also the Immortals film that came out recently, where apparently the gods aren't allowed to meddle in human affairs.
No, because I don't recall
any Greek gods
ever,
meddling in human
for example,
affairs.
Having sex with human
with
women.
Mortals, no, not at all. Or sort of destroying cities people. No, not at all.
Absolutely. I think that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would you eat? Authentic Greek food go with this authentic Greek film?
Yes, quite. Well, there's kalamata.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the new name for Santorini
restaurant,
isn't it?
Yeah, the Greek restaurant on Cali Road.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I haven't been, but I'm told it's really good, and it is very, you know, it's run by Greek people. It's that
it's
taste.
A good sign.
Yeah, exactly. Things like domades, retsina, you know, those authentic Greek foods, while you can presumably still get them. So what about if you're not going to cinema this week? What else is there for you to do going out in Oxford?
Loads of theatre,
mm-hmm.
Kind of with a musical theme.
Yeah, because there
are
absolutely tons of musicals and dance stuff going on this week, isn't it?
Yes, there's a ballet. There's The Nutcracker.
Mm-hmm.
That's Matthew Bourne's version of The Nutcracker. And that's on at the New Theatre till Friday.
Yeah, okay.
And it's a sort of... it's obviously the sort of the classical ballet, but it's got some modern twists to it, I think, or just sort of updated. Like, normally it's really, I read a review which said that normally the Nutcracker is really sort of sugary sweet and innocent.
Yeah, sure.
And this version is a little bit darker in places. And
okay, cool, that's good.
It starts out in an orphanage and it's a little bit
more modern all over, basically.
Yeah, it just has a dark side to it.
Yeah, and I guess it would kind of, maybe the dance, the Sugar Plum Fairy, is a little bit, you know, out of touch for today's kids. They want something a little bit more of a gritty, you know, edgy remake.
Well, this review did say that sweets was kind of, or sugar was kind of made more like the bad guy in it, which is an interesting twist.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we won't go any further and spoil it, but on until Friday at the New Theatre. What else for dance and music fans?
So moving away from the classical, as Anything Goes.
So that's Cole Porter's classic, yeah?
It is, yes. And that's on tonight, Wednesday.
Yep, that's right.
Yes, at the Oxford Playhouse.
Fantastic.
So yeah, that's always fun.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what else is on then?
There's also The Little Shop of Horrors, a bit further out. That's in Wantage.
Great, okay. When's it on?
That's on Wednesday until Friday.
Great,
Friday.
Fantastic. These are all a bit sort of conventional sort of musicals, aren't they? The sort of thing you really could see anywhere. What about something a bit more offbeat, a bit off the wall?
We've got, Paul Merton is in Oxford.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fantastic. Well, that's definitely unusual, isn't it? Yeah.
He's here next Monday.
So okay,
a little bit further ahead. So you know him from, Have I Got News For You?
Yeah.
That kind of thing, yeah. And he's returning to his roots doing stand-up.
Cool, okay.
And the show's called Out Of My Head. It'll be at the New Theatre.
Oh, brilliant, okay.
Nice big venue for him.
Yeah, because he's actually a really, really great performer.
He's really funny. And he does lots of different things. He's really into panto, isn't he?
Really? I didn't know that one.
I've just seen loads of pantos where he's the ugly sister.
It must be a bit weird, isn't it, when your agent gets a casting call being like, we've got a great role for you, it's the ugly sister, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think if you're Paul Merton, you probably would.
Probably used to it by this point, yeah. And he does this, he does an improv show in Edinburgh every year. He's very accustomed, I think, to working a room, sort of like that. So it should be good, anyway.
Yeah.
And moving away from the theatre, what if you want to get a bit outside, daring the April showers this week?
Well, there's Oxford Poetry Walk on. That sort of starts from the Oxford Playhouse.
Yeah.
And the way it works is that you get a sort of an MP3 player, and it's like a sort of an audio guide, and you go around Oxford, and it guides you around, and it reads out poems that are based in Oxford or from Oxford. Well, a lot of them are from Oxford poets that have a connection with Oxford as well.
Oh, so we've got sort of people like, because it is quite a sort of poetic city, isn't it? There's a lot of, got a lot of poetry chops. I mean, obviously you've got Matthew Arnold with his Dreaming Spires.
Yeah, the famous line.
Yeah.
So there's Betjeman wrote.
Betjeman, yes, of course.
There's this one we've got here, which is song for May Day that he wrote.
Oh,
and
right, yeah.
And I thought it was quite nice because we're coming up to May Day.
Of course, yeah. In very, very short space of time, we shall be having people jumping off bridges, or yes. we hope not jumping off
yes.
bridges. We'll do maybe a
well,
special...
Well, that's certainly not in the poem, so it's not what May Day was like when
it's not.
Writing
well,
about
yeah, that's
it.
The thing. It's not a tradition, is it?
No,
it's something that was completely made up in like the 80s or something. We'll, I'll tell you what, we'll do a special feature on May Day bridge jumping and why it's a really bad idea.
We should do that. Yeah. Is it a May Day, definitely.
But yeah, so we've got a little extract of that here. Mm. It's called May Day Song for North Oxford by John Betjeman. And just,
this is the last verse.
Yeah, the last verse. It just goes... And open-necked and freckled, where once there grazed the cows, emancipated children swing on old apple boughs. And pastel-shaded bookrooms bring new ideas to birth, as the whitening hawthorn only hears the heartbeat of the earth.
So very far from jumping off bridges, it's much more peaceful.
It
sure.
is, it's nice, isn't it? Yeah. it's sort of a bit out of fashion, that sort of romantic, almost, you know, with a big R.
Yes.
Delight in nature, but there's something really beautiful about it, isn't there?
Yeah.
And presumably this
quite idealistic about the sort of new ideas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't, I don't know if you could hear my voice there, but those new ideas are capitalized, just so you know that they're important.
Yes.
But presumably this guide takes you around and plays you all of these little appropriate poetic extracts.
Yes, I reckon so. So there are lots of different, I think there's some from Robert Southey.
Mm-hmm.
Betjeman, obviously, Gerard Manley Hopkins.
Ah, right, okay.
Who he wrote a poem about the Binsey poplars.
Right, okay.
That, in 1879, they were cut down. And Gerard Manley Hopkins, being an environmentalist, decided to write a sort of protest poem about them, although it wasn't really so
protest poems. There's a genre we don't really hear so much of now anymore, is it?
So he sort of says how we're destroying nature and that kind of thing, but in a very poetic way.
Okay, cool. So
they were replanted, so I don't know whether the poem had enough.
There we go. We should try writing a nice sonnet for Mr. Cameron, see if pays notice.
Works.
Yeah.
And you can pick those audio guides up from the Oxford Playhouse, from the box office, every day this week till Saturday, during the day, so 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. or 4:30 p.m. when there's no evening show at the Playhouse because they'll be closing. And it's £3 per person, so it's actually quite cheap for such a...
Yeah, it's not bad. Presumably they
have... It's an interesting thing to do, I think.
Yeah, presumably they have sort of actors reading those out. Actually.
Yes, I reckon that's what happened, yeah.
Okay, fine. And then, of course, we couldn't have the whole podcast go past without possibly mentioning this travesty, this outrage. And no, I'm kidding. It's the boat race, of course, that we had this last weekend. Yeah, it was very sad, wasn't it? And it was just... Because, of course... In case you haven't seen it, you know, go and look it up because it was bloody amazing. But we had
incident filled.
Yeah, exactly. Exciting because it was looked at the beginning like being a very close race indeed.
Yeah.
And then there was a guy in the water. He turned out to be
he was a protester.
He was a protester. Yeah, he was protesting against elitism, so he claimed, by choosing to jump in front of these two sports teams of hardworking young people. So the race had to be stopped because he was in danger.
Yeah.
So then they restarted it. There was a collision. Oxford's oar broke, and then
Cambridge won.
Yeah,
because it was 8-7. So.
Exactly, very very easy victory for Cambridge. They cruised in.
Yeah.
And then of course there was also a really rather traumatic
incident at the end.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Oxford's bow was taken ill.
Mm-hmm.
He's just overexertion. I guess,
yeah, I think
it?
So. And he's been hospitalised now, hasn't he?
Has he?
I
haven't heard how he's doing.
I think he's stable, so he's going to recover. But on the whole, it was kind of not the... I just think it was not the boat race that anyone wanted, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the protester really can't be helped except by himself. And I think he has actually been arrested now. But it just seemed to me that once you'd had the collision, once you'd had the second big issue, then it really would have been more sporting, rather than Cambridge finishing the race, just to start again, really, from the restart or from the beginning.
I think must have been such a difficult call for the referee. I think he was within his rights to rule the way he did, just because he sort of said how it was within the rules that if the boat has to abide by its mistakes. And
yeah, he did blame Oxford for the collision, didn't he?
Yeah, and even though it's sad and you kind of wish it had been different, it's kind of At least it's gone by the rules.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because the Oxford Cox appealed, because apparently there's a rule that if you have a collision within 100 metres of the start line, it's no one's fault and you restart the race.
Oh, so...
She argued that exactly, yeah. She argued that a restart was within 100 metres. You know, that was that also counted as a start. The umpire ruled it didn't.
And that's like a really specific situation.
Exactly, yeah. That's a situation that obviously no one really anticipated. Precisely. I mean, this has, as far as I'm aware, never happened before.
Yeah. So it could have gone either way.
Well, it could have gone either way, and the umpire happens to be a former president of the Cambridge Boat Club.
Bit conspiracy theory-ish there, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just on the whole, I think it was just a rather sad affair, and it ruined what otherwise would have been, you know, either way, a well-fought sporting contest.
Yeah.
Which Oxford would have won.
They did appear to be pulling away both times.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, they were marginally ahead. They won last year. Mm. Never mind.
But, I mean, I like the fact that Cambridge was so sensitive at the end that when they won, they didn't have the presentation because the person in the Oxford boat had been taken ill. So it was
And you didn't have the normal sort of celebration, because they normally pick up the cocks and throw them in the river and that sort of stuff. You didn't have that kind of frivolity.
It was quite subdued, wasn't it?
Well, it was. Yeah, it was. I think it was just sad that all these three things happening
had happened all in one go. Yeah,
exactly. Just kind of.
It was crazy.
Well, it was certainly instant filled, wasn't it? It was certainly the sort of thing that I'm really glad that I did watch.
Yeah,
because it was very exciting.
It'll be remembered, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, great. And next up we have
our pick of the week.
Ah, now what's Daily Info's pick of the week this week?
Well, we're doing something a bit different this week. We're getting in one of our colleagues, and we're going to interview him about allotments, because it's the time of year when. Really, sort of, it's springtime and you want to be thinking about planting your nice organic food for
if you
summer.
Happen to have an allotment or a garden for that matter.
Yes, or a garden.
So, in other words, our pick of the week this week is very, really rather literal, because you can be picking those beans and carrots.
Oh, here come the puns.
Ah, excellent. All aboard the pun train.
So, without further ado, I'm going to introduce our colleague, Patrick Vale.
Hello.
Hello, our allotment man. So you have a couple of allotments, or an allotment at least, don't you?
Yes, I've got two. I have one small one, quarter plot in Upper Wolfcote. Mm-hmm. I have a half share with our colleague Susie, who I believe you heard last week on this podcast, which was excellent. And I did go to Butch Cassidy, I must say, because of that podcast.
Cool.
And we share a full plot in Marston.
Is it legal for one person to have multiple allotments?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure you're not revealing your dodgy allotment deals on air.
I think it is actually Susie who's the registered holder of the second
I see. Yes, it's in my colleague's name. Yes,
exactly.
So the allotment was only resting in my account. Yes,
exactly. So my spades are only there by accident. But I don't believe there is any formal limit. As long as you're producing food, I think you're allowed to have as much land as you can reasonably do it on.
So. Okay.
And how do you go about procuring these allotments to hoard then?
You can look at either the Oxford City Council's website, or if you look on Daily Info, there is a marvellous allotment page.
There isn't there? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Source of all information.
Brilliant. And that will have links to all the relevant places that you can find information about where the allotments are, and how to contact people.
Yeah, and that's really easy to find. That's linked to on our homepage at the moment. So, cool.
Great.
And once you've got your allotment, this time of year, what sort of stuff should you be planting? What should you be doing with it?
Well, you can do a number of things in April. There's a lot of stuff that you can plant straight out into the ground.
Yeah.
Great time to plant broad beans, great time to plant runner beans, beetroot, perpetual spinach, also known as leaf
beet. Perpetual spinach, I love that.
It's one of my favourite plants. It's a brilliant, brilliant plant. If you've ever grown spinach, it has a real propensity to bolt, so it will go to seed really quickly.
Okay.
If you don't water it for a week, you come back and it's just all straggly not very nice.
No.
Perpetual spinach, it's very like spinach, much bigger, and is almost drought resistant, so it's a real winner. If you've got an allotment or even just a small patch of ground, plant some perpetual spinach, you'll be delighted.
And does it taste the same?
It's a similar flavour. It's not quite as kind of wilty and dark green as spinach is, but it's satisfyingly green and quite juicy.
Good.
I enjoy it straight off the plant. Not everyone does, but yeah.
You are a vegetable eater, aren't you?
Yeah.
It has to be said. I do like that sort of thing. So
he's a sort of ruminant.
Yes, a wise ruminant. That's what I've been told.
You were telling me about a particular variety of peas earlier that sounded quite exciting.
Yes. These peas I haven't grown before.
Yeah.
So this is my first year to grow telephone peas. These are a variety of tall pea, I believe, from America.
Right.
So named because they grew up telephone poles, apparently.
Okay.
So
cool.
I'm expecting
they're imaginative.
Very big poles.
They're imaginative over there, aren't they?
They know what to call things.
And eating peas fresh out of the grounds on the pods is delicious, though, isn't it? I remember
nothing
them.
Like it.
You lot are a bunch of savages. Vegetables from the supermarket as God intended, okay?
From the freezer cabinet.
Exactly. Mr. Sainsbury's put them there for a reason, okay?
Yes.
He didn't put Mr. Birdseye on this planet for any other purpose.
Precisely.
Captain Birdseye, I beg his pardon.
Yeah.
Thinking what Captain Birdseye might like, you could probably plant parsley now.
Okay.
Go well with your fish. And if you're looking for indoor things, so if you want to grow the more exotic things such as tomatoes, which are quite exotic for the UK, or peppers.
You don't think of them as being exotic, do you?
Not
but
when
they
you
are.
Get them every day of the year, but when the as you were saying about peas, there really is nothing quite like getting
your own.
Something and getting it straight off the plant. It does just taste great.
Yeah.
Especially when it's warm and the sun's been on it. It's really delicious.
Last year we had tomatoes on the Daily Info balcony and we were growing them in pots. And they did taste so much better.
Weren't they successful as well?
Yeah.
And again, certain varieties work really well. A couple kind of produced a few, but there's a couple particularly, I think it was Sun Gold, which were the yellow ones.
Yes, sort of slightly more yellowy-orangey ones.
I have a fact about tomatoes.
What's your fact?
It's that when they were first brought over from America, which is, of course, where they originated, they're not a native old world plant, they were thought to be poisonous and they were kept purely for decoration. And the first people to start eating them were advised to boil them for a couple of hours before eating. So the fresh bite...
Boiled tomatoes.
Boiled tomatoes, yes. So the fresh first bite of a tomato is something that your ancestors would not have been at liberty to experience for danger of death.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Good fact.
Yeah, I like it.
It has been said, and I believe this is true, so a warning for all our listeners, if you have a lot of tomato leaves, you might think, I'll make tomato leaf tea. Don't do that. It's very poisonous. It's full of something that will not do you any good at all.
Really? So maybe this fact of mine, maybe their superstition was actually rooted in solid fact. Maybe someone ate a whole tomato plant and found themselves poisoned.
That's entirely possible. Yeah.
Fascinating. Well, there we go. And that's a good note to round up the pick of the week. So that was Daily Info's recommendations for what to plant on your newfound allotment.
Thanks, Tim. Patrick Vale for that.
Yes.
My pleasure. Check back every week for updates.
Exactly. And for that matter, check back every week for a new podcast. This is dailyinfo.co.uk's podcast. I've been Alwyn Collinson.
I've been Emma Pearson.
And I've been Patrick Vale.
Thanks for listening.
And see you next week.